Welcome to episode 117 of the Spokesman Cycling Roundtable podcast. This show is recorded Saturday, April 18th, 2015. Our apologies for the delay. The Spokesman Cycling Roundtable podcast is sponsored by Jensen USA, where you will always get an incredible selection of products at great prices and unparalleled customer service. For more information, go to jensenusa.com/thefredcast. Hey everybody, it's David from the Fredcast Cycling Podcast at thefredcast.com. I'm the host and producer of the Spokesman Cycling Roundtable Podcast. For show notes, links, and other information, simply go to our website at the-spokesman.com. And now, here are the spokesmen.
Welcome to episode 117 of, yeah, that's a lot, of the Spokesman Roundtable Podcast. And whereas normally we're on Skype and we're all in the different continents and different time zones, today's a special day because there's a whole bunch of us actually, well, I wouldn't say a round table because we're a round chair. This is a round chair podcast, and Richard's going to turn his phone off. Thank you, Richard. Now, I'm going to explain. No, I'm not going to explain. I'm going to let somebody else explain where we are. And I'll also hand the microphone to each guest in turn. But I'm going to first of all go to Paul Skilbeck, who Paul is going to tell me where we are and what his job title is.
Welcome, everybody, to this year's sunny Laguna Seca Recreation Area in Central Coast, California. We are here for the Subaru Sea Otter Classics, the 25th edition of this event, and which, according to some in the cycling world, makes it a true classic in cycling events, having had 25 years of history. And everybody's here. All of the interesting and interested people in cycling from around the world come to this event each year. It draws road cyclists, mountain bikers, cross-country mountain bikers, downhill, dual slalom, stunt riders, trials riders, cyclocross racers. It's really, I think, the only event that I've been to which combines so many different disciplines in cycling. And it's primarily a mountain bike. Started out as a mountain bike event. It's mountain bike dominated, which means it's loads and loads of fun.
Thank you, Paul. Now, 25 years, you're saying, it's been around. So when was that? I can't do my mathematics quick enough. What was the year? 1991. Right, I'm now going to hand across to somebody who has been to, well, the person who I'm going to hand across to can tell us how many he's been to. But whenever I think of Sea Otter, this particular journalist, this particular member of the bike industry, absolutely is the first person who springs to mind. He's laughing here, but it's absolutely true. And that's Chips, again, from the UK. A big UK contingent here today. So, Chips, tell us why you're here and how long you've been coming.
I'm Chips from Single Track Magazine in the UK and Single Track World website. And I've been coming, as far as I can remember, because it's quite a long time ago, I think I've been here every year since 1997. And it was back then when the Cactus Cup was still on in Arizona, and I catched a ride, flew into Arizona, went to the Cactus Cup, and then catched a ride in the back of the Cane Creek team truck in a cross-country journey that took several days to come and see this new event. And I think not long after that, the Cactus Cup faded as the first big event of the year, and the Sea Otter took over, and that's kind of where it has remained. From my point of view as a mountain bike journalist, it's where I come for all of the new product launch, new product stories. It's where you see the mountain bike racers who've changed teams in their new team uniform on their new team bikes, sometimes with secret prototype 2017 products or whatever year it is next year and beyond. And it's also where there's a lot of product launches, sort of open and covert. It's now grown to a point where people know that there'll be the world's worth of journalists coming to it, and they will do launches based on that. Either they'll steal you before the show and buy you breakfast and show you some new stuff, or they'll make sure they you see them at the show. And there's a lot of things on display that, that all the public hear. I mean, because something you've not mentioned is that it's a public event. There's thousands of people here. It's not a trade show like Interbike where you have to be a member of the trade elite to see anything. It's a public show, so there's a lot for people to see, and it's quite nice as a jaded industry person to go, wow, people are really excited about new Shimano stuff and new wheels and new tires, and it's really nice to get that enthusiasm. And then when you have a quiet word at the booth, they'll say, ah, oh, we've got some secret stuff out the back that isn't coming out till next year, but we'll show you. And so there's a lot of, you know, it kicks the season off for everyone. I spoke to somebody today who's starting their talks for 2017 with the OEMs here. So it's there's just everything for everyone from people who just like looking at bikes, who like looking at bike racing, to you know, what's happening 3 years' time.
Thanks, Chips. And we've now got a spokesman, Roundtable podcast, round chair podcast regular, which is Richard. Richard, do you want to introduce yourself, tell people who you are, and maybe how long you've been coming to this place?
Yeah, certainly. Well, I don't know about regular. I haven't been able to make the phone podcast lately. I'm Richard Masoner. I publish Cyclicious, the cycling blog. I've been coming to Sea Otter for, this is my eighth year here, and always new and exciting things to see. Like Chips mentioned, it's a huge consumer show. It is mountain bike dominated, but there are, you know, the past couple of years now, they've been running a Grand Fondo rides, which are more casual kind of rides. I come here to see kind of the utility biking kind of thing, side of things, cyclocross, adventure, gravel bikes. You know, there's a few of those around here. Fat bikes are big here. It's a very consumer-friendly show, and I recommend next year. The podcast is going to be published too late for this year, but I recommend if you've never been to Sea Otter, you should come. It's very worthwhile.
That's a fantastic advert. Thank you. Did you not? Well,
you can go ahead and do it.
I don't think I did. So if you don't mind, I'm going to jump back in very briefly just to. This is Paul Skilbeck back on the microphone and Carlton. I think the first time we met was probably 1998 at a Harrogate Dirty Weekend or one of those mountain bike events back in England. And that we giving away our age a little bit here, but. I've been a journalist and communications consultant in the cycling industry ever since then. Spent 7 or 8 years as a full timer on the Mountain Bike World Cup circuit, and then did a couple of stints as a press officer at the Mountain Bike World Championships, and then I created the first UCI website and came out to live in California at that time, and just fell into a job here at the Sea Otter Classic as the media communication director of the event, which I did for a few years, and have just remained in the cycling industry doing one thing or another as a consultant, and more recently have got heavily into the an old passion of mine. My first nice bike was a handmade custom Lenny Rogers, which is an Australian builder who's actually no longer building, but more recently got into the handmade bicycle industry and doing a lot of work there. So I'll hand it back to you now, having introduced myself to the group.
No, that's absolutely my fault. I should have been listening there. But you were so eloquent on how good the show was, I just didn't realise you hadn't introduced yourself. So that's absolutely my fault. Now, our final guest, and we might have more people coming in, but our final guest that's actually sitting around the chair on our round chair podcast... is Julie. And Julie, do you before we were talking, you didn't know quite how to introduce yourself because you've got lots of hats. Feel free to mention all of those hats and tell people who you are.
Okay. Hi, first time participant, long time listener. My name is Julie Kelly. I work as a principal of my own freelance agency, and I provide public relations, copywriting, project management, and marketing support to various companies, almost all of which are in the bike industry. I am fortunate in the last year or so to have worked on dealer tours for Bicycle Retailer and Industry News magazine, chief cat herder on those events. I did a big freelance project for People for Bike, bikes, helping with a compilation of the industry directory. And I currently am helping do some research for them as well on the e-bike dealer side, as they're working to move some legislation ahead to help us all figure out what to do with e-bikes. Here at Sea Otter this week, I'm working with HiBike, which is a German brand that's here in the U.S. on its second year. They are known in Germany for high-end road and mountain bikes. Here in the U.S., what they've debuted is their e-performance line, so exclusively electric bikes that are powered by the Bosch drivetrains. And, you know, there's quite a bit of PR work that is needed to help everyone understand about the e-bike space and where we all fit into it. This is my fifth Sea Otter. I'm just the baby here compared to certain people who have just entered the room. So I'm going to pass the microphone back to Carlton.
Well, Nadja, I want to come back to you first, because far be it for you to pass to our honored guest who's just popped in, and he's ridden here, which he's probably need to just to get away from all his fans. But I'll introduce you in a minute, and I won't say who I'm introducing, but it's Gary Fisher. But Julie, people have heard a relation of yours on the show before. Now, who might that relation be if we said your second name was Kelly?
Well, I'm part of the Kelly family cycling dynasty. Richard Kelly is my better half, who has been a frequent participant here on the podcast. And he's currently a project manager for the National Bike Dealers Association. And he is working on a huge project to define and create a national mechanic certification program that bike shops can rely on to reliably train and you know, have a point of differentiation over the internet for their service side of their business.
Thank you. Right, as I said there, we've now got mountain biking royalty has joined us, and mountain biking royalty, who must be absolutely boiling. Are you not boiling, Gary, in with what you're wearing?
Well, you know, you try to. It's all about keeping the cool. Come on, moving as little as possible.
Let me describe what Gary's wearing here, and if you've probably seen loads of tweets from the show of what Gary's wearing, everybody knows who Gary is. We don't need to. I could have just said Gary, I think. Okay, so let's because this is an audio podcast, we can't do visual on this. So you are wearing a three-piece. Correct me if I'm wrong. A dashing tweeds suit, a cycling suit. So you're wearing the breeches, and you are wearing cycling shoes. So this is a cycling suit, yeah?
It works very well for cycling. And, yeah, this is something that, you know, that was perfected in the UK in the 20s and 30s. And, well, it's been revitalized by Mr. Guy Hill, who has gone to the mills in northern England and actually done quite a job of revitalizing him with just his imaginative, you know, combinations of fantastic colors. And bringing it into the high fashion world, and he's a keen cyclist. And some years ago, I found him online and said, "Oh, I gotta go there and get one of those." So I did, and it's been quite the bargain, actually. For the money I put into it, I've worn it so many times, and it's so exquisitely comfortable, and lets you just slip and slide into any spot you want.
Now, I was taking a photograph of you before because it's very difficult to prize you away from people at any form of consumer or trade show, because people just want to be with and have their photographs taken with Gary Fisher. And when I took a photograph of you, I normally get the suits that you wear, when I put flash on, reflect back at me. And I'm pretty sure that one didn't. Does this have retro reflectivity threads?
First off, this is the California exception. It's so bright here that doesn't work. And yes, this does have the 3M Lumitwill threads. But quite literally, because it's so bright and you were in sunlight, it didn't register.
Okay. If I just explain, because when we all got here, we did a rough description of what we're going to be doing here. We're going to be handing the mic around. Okay. And we're going to be riffing on different topics at the show. Now, one of the first topics was how many years we've been coming to Sea Otter. So I didn't actually say who I was. I'm Carlton Reed, and I've been coming here once. This is my first time. However...
I was the baby.
No. This is my first. This is my first. We're virgins. Chips said he's been here for 17 years. And, yep. So Gary, same question to you. How many years have you been coming to see us?
Well, I am not the hardworking man that Chips is. Quite honestly, I've often said he's the hardest working guy in the bike biz, in the bike journalism side. At any rate, I've come here maybe about 10 times total over all the years. You know, I didn't make it last year, and I didn't make it to the very first one.
What was the first year you remember?
You know something? California statement. I don't. I really don't. You know, it was probably about 20 years ago or so.
First time I heard about the event was from none other than a very flushed, excited Thomas Frischknecht, who was then, I don't know if he was a World Cup champion or, anyway, he was top flight. This is 1993. He came to me at one of the European World Cup rounds, one of the Grundig races, as we then called them. And he said, Paul, there's this really cool event in California, Sea Otter Classic. You got to go there. Took me about 7 years to finally make it, but I'm glad I did.
Cool, thank you. Now, what we're going to do now is, because we've all now described how many years we've been coming here and back in the day and how all our hair's now, apart from Julie, of course, our hair's all grey, because we're all grizzled veterans of the bike industry. But I'd now like to go on to our favourite or our most exciting products that we've seen at the show, or maybe not products, concepts or people. I mean, I've been blown away. I'll start first, actually. I've been blown away by the number of women at the show. I've been blown away by the number of kids at the show. That is absolutely phenomenal to get the... And I know, Gary, you're kind of very much into the getting kids on bikes as a key way. But here, we do see tons of kids on bikes. But if it's not that sort of thing, if it's in a product that you've seen, so just maybe a couple of highlights or one highlight of what you've seen at the show so far. So I'm going to start with Richard.
Oh, okay. So, yeah, I've been here since Thursday, so I've been here every day of the show so far. And like Carlton mentions, yeah, this is a very kid-friendly event with a lot of kid-friendly things here. There's trials riders putting on shows all the time. As far as products, I'm going to suck up to Mr. Fisher for a second and talk about the Trek. Trek announced a new 29er called the Stash, and I rode that around. It's got a 3-inch tire on it and three-inch tires, and took that out on the trail. It's a fun bike. It's got a very short wheelbase, very sprightly handling, and it's pretty lightweight for the size of bike it is. I'm pretty surprised, and I think it could take up to a 4-inch tire, can it? Certainly, yeah.
I'd love to, you know, because it's funny. You know, you talk about this bike. This bike's a really cool bike. Okay,
yeah,
all right, fine. That being said, it's like okay, what's it? It's going to do something for us. Oh man, especially my product managers, they're so happy you can't believe it. Like those guys, they totally sweat bullets to like what the magazine guys say, and they've already gotten a bunch of good feedback on that particular bike.
Right.
As far as what's it do to the bike industry, well, it's one of these bikes that like it cannibalizes other bikes. It's a really good bike, and it's like it's a funny bike in that. Okay, it's one of these categories that like, well, my racers aren't going to use it. My downhill guys aren't going to use it. My guys who do tricks and all the crazy stuff, they're not going to use it. You know who's going to use it? You know what it does? It's in the category of, this is a bike that makes an average rider into a better rider, more capable, And it's a fun bike, and that it's like, it's the type of bike too, that like it's got these big, huge tires on it. So nobody expects you to climb very fast, but the reality is it climbs really well considering. Because of the traction, whatever, So it's one of these things where, like, they're going to let you off the hook. Nobody's going to expect you to climb really well, but you're going to clean all the sections.
Why is that? And you've know more about this than I do, but I've actually not ridden a fat bike, but it just occurs to me that, and everyone tells me they climb really well, and it just occurs to me that might be because the tire's so wide and you've got so much surface area contacting the dirt. Is that correct?
Our competitor says that on a road bike, aero is everything. On a mountain bike, you can equally say traction is, an amazing thing. But you look at people that go super fast, And they tend to ride really narrow stuff and get away with it, you know. And they're superbly skilled in everything, and they do it. And those guys aren't going to ride this thing. The bike for us that's the game changer is a kid bike. And the kid bike, what's a game changer about it is now we're going to open up the floodgates. All of our competitors are going to do one, two, or three, or four. And this makes a lot of sense because, man, you're dead right. You know, we're seeing a lot of kids come into the sport. You know, it's like 10 years ago, mountain biking was not cool for a teenager. And now it's the stuff. It's unbelievable. It's sort of totally twisted around. And, the bike industry will take due advantage of it, you know, as they always do and everything. And I spoke to Austin from Nike today. And it's like, Nike is a, you know, it's the National Interscholastic Cycling Association. It's for the USA, USA only. But, man, you got to realize there's 174,000 high schools in the United States. Holy mackerel. If we can get 20% of them, that's a bigger influx of bike riders than ever in the history of the United States.
Mike Sinyard, the founder and owner of Specialized Bicycles, who's been a huge supporter of Nike, you say it's for USA only, but Mike Sinyard goes to Europe, and he talks to his national distributors in Europe and say and encourages them to adopt the Nike system in Europe because it's the best youth sports organization I've ever encountered in any sport. But we can go into that later, maybe another day.
That's definitely another podcast, I would say. I'm taking the mic away for you guys. And I'm going to hand it to Chips and ask Chips the same question. And it may be the same bike, I don't know. What has really piqued your interest at that at Sea Otter, Chips?
It's been quite a good year for new products. Sometimes you wander around and go, what's new? And everyone says, oh, you saw everything at Interbike, we haven't got anything. But this year there is a lot of stuff going on. There is the whole plus size thing, which possibly is a whole another world. But the people are making bikes for 3-inch tires and wide rims. There's 27 plus and there's 29 plus. The 27 plus kind of happened almost overnight by bike industry standards, and it's a bit, there's the 29 plus, which was kind of pioneered a couple of years ago and has been taken up by Trek. The 27 plus it's a bit kind of who's this for? And it does appeal to product managers, it seems, who have certainly got the whole first production run of all the new 27 inch wide tires and wide rims. And in terms of who actually is asking for this, we'll find out, I suppose. And I'm just waiting for the complaints from my readers about how the bike industry is trying to sell them even more bikes now, and they've only just got 27.5 bikes, and now those are out of date. But it might be that they appeal to a completely different market and everything. Other things I've seen. Cliff have a very interesting pizza flavored gel.
Yes, it's delicious. I've tried it.
Don't knock it. You know, the times when you've got a 6-hour ride full of sugary gels and you're like, I really fancy some sausage now. Yes. So worth, and sweet potato and sea salt.
This is straight out of Arthur C. Clarke. You saw Space, like 2001, A Space Odyssey. And he said, "Yeah, he's up in the space. He's up in the spacecraft, and he's having. That's right. He's eating his like his roast beef flavored gel, which is what it was."
Yeah, the main complaint I've heard about the new Cliff Savory Foods is that it comes in this squeeze bottle that looks like baby food, right? And that's what people think of as baby food, but it doesn't have a baby food texture. I mean, it is a decent, you know, it's a nice. It's like V8. It's like a V8 in a paste or something like that.
And this is obviously the man who eats baby food. Yeah.
Well, don't we all?
Yeah. Julie, without you actually plugging any of your brands, if you think you're going to be plugging any of your brands, you can't. Have you wandered around the show for a start? If you have, you've got to tell me something that's not one of your plugged brands.
Okay. Well, No and no. No, what I've seen that really has impressed me and genuinely impressed me, because I'm someone who loves cycling and I'm someone who scratched my head just like all of you have scratched your head and said, why don't more people do this? You know, where do we grow the pie? What has impressed me the most are the faces of people bringing back demo bikes that I've had the opportunity, you know, much of my time I've been within a 10-foot radius of the high bike booth. So electric mountain bikes I cannot think of a better place to go demo an electric mountain bike. And I would invite or challenge any of you to please, you know, go find any of them that are here. There are very many demos available from all the different brands. And people are smiling. You see a husband and a wife, you know, they kept up with each other on the climb. I see Gary nodding. He knows what I'm talking about. It's a great equalizer. And I'm a roadie. I'm a cat too on the road. And I race bikes. And I understand that it's cheating. You think it's cheating until you ride it and you feel it. And you remember, like, wow, bike riding is really fun. And it's really just a rush to have that. So that's one of my biggest takeaways so far this weekend.
Julie, you should get a job in PR. Maybe you should think about going into something like that.
Do I get to mention my coolest new thing at the
CES? Well, because you had so long with that one. Yes, of course you do.
Nike is not a new thing. It's not a new thing. It may be the coolest thing at Sea Otter, but it's not a new thing. You know, for 15. Okay, so the coolest new thing I saw at Sea Otter, I haven't, being the press officer here, I haven't actually had much opportunity to look at the products in the expo or the races out in the dirt and the roads, but I've studied very closely the press, and the best thing, and it's really 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 good for the world of cycling, is the mainstream media, the local TV stations who've come here to cover the event. And typically they come in the past, what they've done is that they've come here to look at the event and they've done a kind of press release coverage, which is, and with all due respect to Julie and also myself who work in PR, press release coverage is totally boring, uninteresting, it's just flaccid. And this year, the local TV stations, they've been scratching the surface, and they, like you, they noticed how many women were here. And so this year, one of them has done a news feature on the number of women coming into cycling. And then today they did a news feature on we're here right on the edge of Fort Ord National Monument, which is 7,200 acres of really quite it's not wilderness land, but it's great parkland, rolling hills, full of there are 86 miles of dirt trails for mountain biking. There's a whole road network which is totally car free. And they've done a feature on how events like Sea Otter Classic make this more accessible to people who don't have experience going out in the countryside for recreation. And these people have got a whole load of fears which prevent them from getting out of the towns. Like, they're afraid of getting lost, they're afraid of hurting themselves out in the countryside. So an event like Sea Otter, it's a safe, controlled environment for them. They know they're going to be supervised. They know they aren't going to get lost. The trails are already well marked. And so
I managed to get lost on that track bike.
Yeah, but you probably get lost riding around San Jose.
Yes, I do.
So
lost on purpose.
So yeah, but anyway, so one of the TV stations will be doing a feature on this. So like, they're actually taking they're taking the sport of cycling as a much more serious thing, and like, they're starting to learn about it themselves. And so since I first started doing media work here at Sea Otter, I've seen this. It's a quantum leap in the awareness and the understanding and the respect in the mainstream media for cycling. And I think that's something that you've seen a lot being in the UK as well. You've seen it there. And for me, it's you know, this is what I've been in cycling for so many years, is to see this. And, you know, and it just fills me with joy.
Do you know, I didn't see him nodding, but I've had many conversations with Gary about this exact same thing. I'm pretty sure you would have agreed with everything Paul said there.
Well, yeah, that's that. You go. I love the bike media, but give me real media. You know, give me stuff. I want to reach. I love reaching thousands of enthusiasts. You know, 10,000. You know, hardcores. But I'd much prefer to reach, you know, a few million potential newbies. Well, yeah, I want to be on TV. I want to sell what we're doing because I'm having a good time, and if I can tell people I'm having a good time, they come. You know,
I brought them to you yesterday, right?
You did.
I grabbed him.
No, we did. We did the media thing, and my thing, what I've been telling people lately is like, hey, we're burning calories. You know, very few. We have a crisis going on. You know, in the United States and the world. United States, I mean, it's 16 to 18% of our gross domestic product is spent on healthcare. We're quite uncompetitive for a lot of places in the world now. In addition, you know, 3 out of 4 Americans are overweight or bigger, you know. And right now, holy mackerel, for the first time in history, my kids are not going to live as long as I do. You go and you Google, you know, life expectancy, and you see all these, you know, major authorities saying, guess what? It's turning down right now. And what have you done? You know, a bike, you know, if you can burn 200 or 300 calories pretty easily in a day. You know, 100 calories extra a day is 10 pounds a year. And we all feel that as Americans. I mean, so many people feel that, and we have something. We got a cure, and we're bringing it to the kids. And I was here, I was talking to the guys from Ray's Indoor Mountain Bike Park, because I use these guys all the time as a reference. I say, we're going to build, I go to city leaders now, and I say to them, we're going to build Ray's Indoor Mountain Bike Park / safe routes to school. We're going to drill right through buildings. We're going to go right over streets. And their eyes get big, because finally somebody's coming to them with a reasonable solution and something, you know, and it's like the developers are into it too, because you don't develop, you know, new buildings, new infrastructures for what is today. You develop for what's coming. And we look at the millennials today and they're like, they're ditching the car, they're taking the money, they're paying for rent for it, they're using Uber, Zipcar, and a bike. And they're walking around, they like public transport, they'd sooner spend an hour and a half where they can like communicate with their friends, instead of, you know, 45 minutes to an hour and a half in total stressville with their car. They've lost romance with the car and everything. And this whole car thing, you think about it, man, that's only like 75 years we've had that.
You're talking there about San Francisco, which is where you and I live, and some other large cities in USA, which is, you know, which are kind of leading cities. I'm wondering if it's similar. Well, hang on a sec, because I got the microphone. I want to ask the English people here if you're seeing like similar things happening in English cities.
I think certainly in London there are just, you know, thousands more people. Thousands, probably tens of thousands more people riding bikes. I was a bike messenger at the end of the 80s, and you kind of almost knew every cyclist to nod at after a few months, because, you know, you were the crazy ones who were out there. And now you have to fight your way to the front of a junction if you want to do that. So you've got all these people. I mean, some of them need a bit of education, I think, because you've got a lot of inexperienced cyclists en masse, which is probably quite a dangerous thing if you're not careful, but there are a lot more people riding bikes in the big cities where it makes sense. I think where you get more rural, people still aren't kind of riding to work or riding to the shops or the market as a matter of course. I think possibly it's weather dependent. We have weather, but then people do it in Holland and they have weather too. So. It's kind of getting there, but we'll see.
Yeah, I agree with Gary, and I certainly agree with Chips. Thank you for bringing that up there, Paul. It's worth pointing out that some streets in London, some major roads in London, not just, you know, minor back streets, commuting routes into London have got 75% bicycle traffic. Now, why wouldn't you, as a city authority, cater to the majority users of the roads? So cars in the centre of London are like 20% of traffic, you know, private motor cars. So clearly, as Gary was saying with millennials, that trend is absolutely going to accelerate forward. And Gary wants to butt in here. Come on.
Well, another major trend, and we talk, you know, 100 years ago, families of wealth and power would always raise their kids in the cities. Mm-hmm. That trend started, you know, some 75 years ago to flee the city. And it's a, you know, a recent trend. Historically, it is not.
Mm. I absolutely agree. And I've written a book about this as well, Gary. Roads were not built for cars. And I'm in the reason I'm in California at the moment, and I flew in last night from the East Coast, was because I'm researching the book, and I'm going to be coming to Gary to talk about this. My next book, which is about the bike boom. So the boom that we actually had when Gary was a young man, when he was doing stuff in the 1960s, and then absolutely in the 1970s with the mountain bike boom. I'm going to be coming right up to date with discussing the London bike boom, the San Francisco bike boom, the Montreal bike boom, the levels of cycling that's coming up. However, right this second in time, we are going to go for a commercial break.
Hey, thanks, Carlton. Wow, what a great panel. I'm really jealous that I wasn't there. But hey, everybody, it's David from the Fredcast. And of course, you know, I'm the normal host and producer of the Spokesman Cycling Roundtable podcast. And just wanted to step in here real quickly to thank our show sponsor, and that is Jensen USA at JensenUSA.com. Now, we've told you about Jensen here on the show many, many times, and I told you that they are, well, in my opinion, the leaders when it comes to having a great product selection at phenomenal prices, but where they really shine is in their unparalleled customer service. Go ahead and give them a call. Ask them a question. If it has to do with bikes, their gear specialists, who are riders themselves, will be able to answer pretty much any question you might throw at them if it's cycling related. And I think that you'll find that that is what makes Jensen USA stand out among the crowd. Now, one of the things that the guys have been talking about there at Sea Otter is urban cycling. And Spot Brand Bicycles has recently come to Jensen USA. And if you're not familiar with Spot, go ahead and take a look at JensenUSA.com. These are belt-driven bikes, really fun to ride, low maintenance, just great urban bikes. If you haven't seen them before, check it out. This is your next urban commuter. I think you'll really enjoy it. And you're going to find a great selection and phenomenal prices there at Jensen USA. So check them out. It's JensenUSA.com. The easiest way to get there is go to our website, the-spokesmen.com, and click that Jensen USA link. But whatever you do, however you get to Jensen, whether you call or go directly to their website, would you please let them know you heard about them here on The Spokesman? It helps us out a lot. We thank Jensen USA for being a sponsor of The Spokesman, and we thank you for supporting Jensen USA. And now, a little bit of time traveling back to Sea Otter 2015 with Carlton and the rest of the amazing Spokesman guests on our show. Thanks for listening. Hey, Carlton, back to you.
And we're back, and we are at Sea Otter Classic. It's been going for 25 years, and it's in sunny, beautiful weather here at Monterey, California, and close to Monterey, the Laguna Seca racetrack, about 6 miles from Monterey?
Yeah, just outside Monterey, and it's the Laguna Seca Recreation Area.
Oh, sorry, so the racetrack is part of the recreation area. I do apologize for that. Now, what we didn't get from before from Gary, and that's because he went segued straight into what Richard was talking about, and I'm going to ask him the same question. I think we've all now answered the question about what we thought was the best thing at Sea Otter. Gary didn't answer that, but I'm only going to let him answer that. He's leaning forward. I'm leaning backwards. He can only answer that if it is not a product from himself or a product from a company he is associated with. It has to be something different. It can be a whole overarching concept, or it can be a product like a pizza gel, whatever you want. But it must be. Do you promise me it won't be a product? Okay,
you have the mic.
Okay, it's really easy. This time I spent time just riding my bike around here all by myself in the morning. I'd get up, I'd go on a ride at 6:30 in the morning and ride for a couple of hours, and wow, it's so beautiful here. Yes. Oh, that's all. It's just beautiful, beautiful, and beautiful, and I really, really appreciate what I did. That's all.
Oh, that's perfect. Riding. We all need to get out there, and I haven't ridden at all here, so I'm absolutely desperate to get out, maybe tomorrow. Now, normally on this show, we'll go through a whole bunch of maybe 5 or 6 topics. We have covered a lot of ground here, so I'm only going to go for one more topic, and then we'll go to how we can contact each other and tell everybody how to... and that's where you can plug your stuff even more. But what I'd like to discuss first of all, I mean, we discussed this before we came in before Gary came in, I should say, and that was one of the trends at the show is electric mountain bikes. And that is potentially so contentious, because I think we almost had a fight even before we started, and Richard quite rightly said, you know, hold your fire for the podcast itself. So I'm going to go back to Gary, and I'm going to ask Gary his views on electric mountain bikes. So we're not going to be talking about electric bikes per se, electric bikes for commuting in cities, purely electric mountain bikes, because Julie is representing the high bike brand. I know there's some electric bikes in your stable. And if I just, we just go around and we talk about the concept of electric bikes on trails, and perhaps talk about how IMBA, the International Mountain Bike Association, is currently at this moment wrestling with the concept of trail use of potentially what could be considered by some a motor vehicle. And that's what they've been trying for 25 years to say, no, we're not a motor vehicle. We don't have any traction apart from what we do as human powered. So, Gary, I'm going to hand the mic to you, and you either wax lyrical about electric bikes or you slam electric bikes. You do whatever you want. I'm guessing I know which way you're going to go, but if we can talk about electric mountain bikes on the trail.
Okay, it's been contentious. And in fact, someone unfriended me on Strava. Anyway, it's getting to be less contentious, because people actually go out and try them and everything.
Yeah.
And yeah, they need to be regulated. I believe that. You know, you could be stupid about them. You know, you could have a 1,000-watt extra super batteries and be a mean guy out there. But, you know, as they are now, and their whole concept is that they weigh far less than the rider. You know, they're around 50, 55 pounds. You still got to be able to pick them up and get them over things, you know. And no, I mean, you know, you couldn't take this thing on Porcupine Rim right now. It's a little bit of a liability because it's too long. But it really serves what a lot of people want to do. They want to go ride for an hour and a half, and they want to be enticed to do it. And I look at it, you know, I mean, you know, like Jimmy Mack doesn't like him and everything. Jimmy's an old friend. Jimmy's always going to be a friend. I don't care what Jimmy thinks. I love Jimmy, you know. And I say to Jimmy, I say, Jimmy, you know, should be only people that get an excuse from their doctor. Because you know what? That's exactly the point, is our society needs this more than us selfish little mountain bikers need to keep them off.
Can we just describe Jimmy Mack basically?
Jimmy Mack, longtime editor of Mountain Bike Action. Jimmy Mack, respected around the world, in the bike world, quits Mountain Bike Action because they own Electric Bike Action. Yeah. You know? Heavy duty stuff, you know, but
to be fair to him,
yes,
Gary, and to put that a little bit more into perspective, I think he's being lent on by his publisher to write certain things about electric bikes. I don't think it was just there was another magazine in the stable. It was they said came to him and said, you've got to write this about electric bikes, or do not slam them like this. I think that's why he left. Yeah,
okay, that's good. But at any rate, you know, I am in favor of electric mountain bikes. I hope I never have to ride one. Honestly, and I see, I think crazy thoughts too, like this whole electric thing. It's like, you know, Strava puts it together, figures out your average wattage and everything, and then we have handicap races where one person rides an electrified vehicle, the other one doesn't, you know, and I think for the road and for a mountain, it could be really interesting even on a World Cup level. Is that crazy? Yeah, I'm crazy. I think it could be a crazy contest, you know, because UCI recently said, oh, let's go men and women in the event and everything. Let's equalize stuff more. Let's mix it up, make it more fun, you know. That makes it more fun. Everybody knows that. I mean, the fact the media is getting out that the Sea Otter has a lot of women here, man, we couldn't do anything better to get more women here, you know, and more guys, everything, you know. All right.
Cool. I'm gonna take that straight across to Chips and just ask him his view on electric mountain bikes on trails.
So electric mountain bikes are heavier. They're cheating. They make it easier to go fast. when maybe you don't know, you know, what you're doing. But these were all exactly the same comments with suspension. So we had a young intern who was like, electric bikes should only be for the sick. And I was saying, well, you ride an 8-inch travel bike. You're a downhill dude. And you ride this great big bike. So you're cheating. You're using technology to go faster on trails. You're using bigger brakes, bigger suspension. And that's all stuff. I can remember when the first suspension forks came out. And it was like, well, they add weight. And, you know, and you go faster and you may not be able to go around corners that quick. And everyone rides suspension now. So that's, I think that's quite an interesting comparison in terms of the cheating thing and riding them. They're fun things. I do agree with Gary. They do need to be regulated in some way, so you can't do 40 miles an hour on them. But, you know, even as a vaguely fit mountain biker, I've been riding with a camera bag and been able to keep up with the World Cup races that I was taking pictures of because... I had, you know, a bit of a tailwind, an artificial tailwind, and that's kind of how it feels. I think, you know, they're an investment, they're expensive, so they're not going to be, we won't see thousands of them on every trail. But like some people were saying, you know, they're 70 years old and they want to ride with their kids or their grandkids, and they can go on a two-hour ride, mountain bike ride. Everyone enjoys going riding, and I'm not against them in theory, and I think a lot of people that are against them have never tried them.
Okay, I'm going to go to Richard now, and maybe bring in some. Where do you think IMBA's going to fall on this? Do you think they're going to be very diplomatic, or they're going to fall one way or the other?
Yeah, so I was talking with both the Bosch people and IMBA yesterday. IMBA is the International Mountain Biking. Is it international?
Yes.
Yeah. Association based, yeah, in name, because they're based in Boulder, I think, right? Yeah, and Bosch is the for about a couple years now, they've been big on promoting their mid-mount motor for all kinds of bicycles, including mountain bikes. A lot of people have been integrating them into the systems. So IMBA, apparently they're reevaluating their position, and what they were telling me is that they think it's inevitable. It's kind of like I live in Santa Cruz, California, and the big thing there is trail access, and you know, the people that hike don't want bikes on the trails. The mountain bikers, they say we need legal places to ride because they're going to do it anyway, so you might as well regulate it and make it legal and have some professional trail building going on. And so, you know, the electric mountain bike, it's going to happen anyway. You're not going to be able to stop this thing from happening. And I agree with the opinions here about it does expand the availability of this physical activity. And it's still very physical. You've got, you know, maybe a 250-watt motor. You still have to put some effort into it, or quite a bit of effort if you're going up a hill. And when you're going downhill, it's not going to make you go faster. You know, it's not like a dirt bike, a gasoline motor dirt bike where you're going to be, you know, shooting rooster tails or anything like that. It just gives you a little lift up. You know, so much mountain biking, recreational mountain biking is lift served anyway. You climb up on a ski lift or you take a van to the top of a mountain. You know, electric mountain bikes will have way less impact than those kind of weekend activities like that. And that's my opinion. I think it's going to happen. I think it's going to become more popular. I'm not a hardcore mountain bike racer. I'm more of a road person. But I enjoy getting out on the trails every once in a while. And, you know, I think it's a good thing. I think it's a positive development.
Okay. There's been nobody anti. And I'm only going to give you the microphone. If you're anti, Paul, what do you say? Are you going to be nice about e-mountain bikes?
No. I'm not
are you going to be...
Nice about
what are you going to... You're going to be contrarian here. What are we going to have?
Well, okay. you know, and in general, I don't think there are any shoulds or shouldn'ts. It's mainly what is and what isn't. But here's, in principle, I like the idea. And if it's something that encourages more people to ride more bikes, I think it's good. I have a concern. And that is about the joyrider who gets stuck with a dead battery you know, 20 miles from anywhere. With these bikes, you can go a long way. Yeah. And if you're not, you know, and if you're not on with the thing about getting out into the wilds on a mountain bike is that in order to do that without an engine, you've got to do a lot of mountain biking. And a lot of mountain biking makes you an experienced mountain biker. And an experienced mountain biker is generally a pretty competent mountain biker. There's somebody who knows how to handle their nutritional needs. There's somebody who knows how to ride the bike well enough in different terrains so they aren't going to have a bad accident and injure themselves way far away from anywhere. And I think that putting engines in mountain bikes enables a lot of novices to get themselves potentially into a whole lot of trouble. They can, and so I think that there's, you know, I think there's definitely a good potential for, you know, for a reasonable number of fatalities, and definitely a lot of people who are stranded out there, and that can mean that you get stuck out overnight, and overnight means the temperature drops way down, so quite, you know, possibly a few cases of exposure. And that's my worry about putting engines in mountain bikes. That's the first thing.
That's law?
Oh, yeah. you know, and I've been reassured at Interbike last year. I've been reassured very, very confidently by a lot of product managers that the scenario I outlined, it just won't happen. That's ridiculous. You know, people will be more conscientious than that. And I've got news for these product managers. People aren't. People are, as an event organizer, I can promise you that people do the most crazy, ridiculous things, not seldom, but often. And these, you know, these are things that really damage themselves. So, and I can also tell you that I was a mountain biker as well, and I got myself into a trouble of, it's one of the ways that you learn, right? Anyway, the other issue that I just wanted to touch on in relation to IMBA, which there's this whole thing about it's not a British thing, so it's something that British listeners won't quite understand maybe so much in Britain, as I understand
it's
that
it's an American show.
It's an American show. Okay. Oh, okay. So it's not really. It's there's this thing about no mechanized vehicles. And this is what IMBA's been arguing about, to gain access to wilderness areas. And for a long while, you know, and IMBA's been saying that listeners, I should say that in England this problem doesn't really exist because the designation is based on the amount of noise that your recreational vehicle makes. And so cycling has been there's a designation of quiet sports. And so in the UK, cycling is called a quiet sport. And in that case, like the motorized bicycle would be fine because it doesn't make any noise. It's a whole, America's got itself into a huge amount of trouble, which probably is deliberate on the part of some land management controlling agencies to say no mechanized vehicles, which I just got to say is stupid because a horseshoe is a mechanization and a spring loaded.
I went there. I'm doing this thing, you know, Bobby Weir, the Grateful Dead, John Oates, a Hall & Oates, and we're out in Montana, and we're doing a mountain bike ride to protest clear cutting out there. And we get off the plane, and the first thing that happens is a bunch of firsters go after us and say, "We hear you mountain bikers are trying to get access in Point Reyes. You know, and we are really protesting access of any kind in the Glacier Forest. And what they want is humans, when they go into, you know, a Glacier National Forest, they either wear their barefoot or they wear moccasins, because those waffle stompers do a lot." And I told them, you know, it's all different levels. You know, I can totally relate to that in Montana. But in the San Francisco Bay Area, there used to be hunting clubs out there, and there are paved roads still. And, man, 747s are flying overhead every 10 minutes. You know, it's a different situation. And he agreed with me.
I'm going to leave the final word to Julie, because she's a PR person, and that's what she's representing here. She's representing Haibike, Bike, a German brand of mountain bikes and of electric mountain bikes. But before I hand you the microphone, Julie, I'm going to throw you a curveball. Now, I'm a historian. Throughout history, whenever motors have been attached to vehicles, those motors, by dint of consumer demand, have got faster and more powerful every single year. Do you imagine that the current wattage, the current torque potential on the bikes that we, the e-bikes, e-mountain bikes that we have today, will they still be the same in 10 years' time? Will we have what Gary was talking about, what Richard was talking about, in effect, regulation to keep the standards where they are now, or will consumers push and push and push because they've got to become more and more powerful? So that's your curveball. Okay. After you've answered the curveball, then you can go into your views of electric bikes in general.
Okay. Well, thanks. Thanks a lot. Yeah, the technology already has improved. Bosch is already on Gen 2 of their motor, and it's a system that is measuring torque and speed and altitude and constantly feeding information back to the computer. And the batteries are going to get lighter, and hopefully they'll get more environmentally responsible because they're nasty things to make. But will it reach a breaking point and cause injury, death, and destruction out on trails? I don't know, but I really hope not. I really hope that we'll, as an industry, not just build what sells, but also build it responsibly and look to the end game. You know, Gary mentioned, you know, you don't build a community thinking of today's needs. You're trying to look down the road or down the trail and make sure that you're making something sustainable. And I would very much hope and encourage the players in the field to make put a lot of attention toward the sustainability of not just the electric mountain bike industry, but our industry on the whole. So,
what about that point about will manufacturers be able to keep the power the same and the speed the same?
I doubt they will be. I mean, but I do think that right now there is no consensus within the United States about what is a motorized vehicle, what is an electric mountain bike, what is an acceptable threshold of speed, and that work is happening now. So regulation is really important, in my opinion.
You know, I've been studying the regulation in the United States. And we see, you know, like you go to North Beach, and up there, Tony's Pizza delivers more pies, makes more pizza pies than anybody in San Francisco, and he's got, you know, 2,000-watt delivery bikes and one 3,000-watt delivery bike, and they're a little, you know, off the chart right now, and you know, a 250-watt mountain bike motor, we could make a 350. In fact, they have, and a 400 and a 500 or whatever. But the problem is, you use up more juice faster. Okay, back to the battery. What battery technologies can come along to make it either lighter or last longer? Now, Europeans are, a lot of them are asking for it to last longer because they use a lot of electric bikes, not just in the cities, but also more in the suburban areas, you know, and connected up. And the American consumers are, like, the whole thing is coming on like crazy right now. Every city I go to, there's one or two or three electric bike-only bike shops. And they were suffering 5 years ago as true believers. And 3 years ago, they couldn't get their hands on enough product. And now all the big makers are starting to come in. So we're going to start seeing, I mean, even the Trek. I mean, Trek, we sell a ton of electric bikes in, you know, in Europe. And we sell an electric mountain bike in Europe, too, you know, that we don't sell in the United States because it has been controversial. But I think that controversy is lifting quickly. And, you know, to speak to, like, are people going to hot rod stuff? Of course. Is it going to be the majority? No. Absolute minority. Because this is sort of like a whole thing of convenience. You know, it's a hassle to like hot rod these things. Let me tell you, electronics is not as simple as it looks, my friend. It's not like hot rodding a bike or a car or something, you know. It's something. You know, you got to know your stuff. Well, there will be these kids. They will do this stuff. They do this. But it'll stand out and it'll be the old thing, you know. And it's, I see it as more an assist thing, you know, of like we're going to help a lot of people get on bikes. And if we got something that we need to regulate, well, that's good for a change because we've been such a small little tiny bit of transportation. And, you know, like a city like San Francisco has done pretty well with transportation with bikes, but man, there are parts of the city that are hilly. Nobody rides a bike. And now all of a sudden, they're starting to do it on these electric bikes. So it's a good thing.
Okay, thanks, Gary. We're now going to wrap up the show because we've been going a wee while there, and there were other topics we could have got onto, which I'm probably glad that we didn't. I won't say what they were, but they would have been pretty contentious. Now, what we're going to do now is we're going to go round with the microphone, and we're going to say how people can get in touch with us, say our name again, and if you've got a Twitter handle, then give your Twitter handle. If you're Facebook, if you're whatever you are, whatever public persona you want to give. And I'm going to hand, first of all, to Julie. And Julie, because we kind of cut you off there, and we didn't really get the whole spiel there on your view on electric bikes, if you wanted to start with your view on it and then give your contact details, go for it. And then we'll go to Chips, and then to Paul, and then to Richard, and then to Gary, and then to me.
Okay. Well, to be short and sweet, the one thing that came to mind that hasn't been said already is that many people probably don't know this, but there's an event that dovetails into CIATR up here in Monterey every year, and it's called the Bicycle Leadership Conference. It's put on by the Bicycle Product Suppliers Association, and it is primarily for the suppliers in the industry to learn best practices and talk with each other about literally the topic of this year's conference was growing the market. One of the photos that was associated with the event agenda showed a bunch of white, lean men on carbon fiber road bikes. If we keep thinking of that as our market, we won't grow. So that's all I need to really say to sum up, you know, e-bikes on trails or even, you know, from here to the grocery store. I think we need to open our minds if we want to open our market.
Okay, and where can we find you?
You can find me. I am, my business is called Marvelous, emphasis on Velo, Marvelous Creative Solutions, and I am Julie at marvelouscreative.net.
Thank you. And Chips?
Hello. I'm the editor of Single Track Magazine, so you can follow the magazine, which is online. We are singletrackworld.com. On Twitter and Instagram, we are at Single Track Mag. And me, myself, I am at Chips with two Ps on Twitter. So there you go.
I'm Paul Skilbeck, and you will soon be able to find me towards the end of this year. Right now I'm lost. But soon I'll be found at handbuiltbicycleguide.com, which is an encyclopedic industry guide to the hand-built bicycle industry and all the small manufacturers in the cycling business.
I'm Richard Masoner, otherwise known as Cyclicious. You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at CYCLELICIOUS. OUS, sorry. Facebook / bike blog. And the website is CYCL. Now I can't say it because Carlton's laughing at me. And I am a Kickstarter supporter of Carlton's current project. I don't remember how much I contributed, but I'm sure I paid for part of his plane ticket here. And I'm glad he's here. And I'm going to hand this off to Gary now.
Thank you. I'm Gary Fisher. Gary, G-A-R-Y, _ Fisher, F-I-S-H-E-R. Now that's on Twitter. It's pretty easy to find me there.
And there's a whole bunch of bikes with your name on as well. So.
Well, I'm a longtime bike builder, and I currently work for Trek Bicycle. And yeah, I'm involved in this crazy business that gets saner and saner all the time. It's wonderful.
Thank you, Gary. And I think your message has been probably the same since the 70s. Basically the same message: get out there on a bike because the bike saves the planet. My name is Carlton Reed, and I'm the executive editor of bikebiz.com and a historian with Roads Were Not Built for Cars, and that's .com, and bikeboom.info, which is the new book. This has been episode 117 of the Spokesman Cycling Roundtable podcast. Thank you ever so much for listening. Tell your friends about the podcast, and then next edition of the show, I'm sure David, our normal host, David Bernstein of the Fredcast, I'm sure he'll be back in the chair, and we'll all be in different parts of the world again. But thank you ever so much for listening today, and that's over and out from the Laguna Seca Recreation Area. Monterey, California. We've been at the Sea Otter Classic, the 25th year of that show. Goodbye.